Hello. Welcome, listeners, to the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260, sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dana Lake, your host for the next hour, and I'm reminding you that we're here every Saturday morning at 10 a.m., trying to cover a wide range of subjects on health, diet, nutrition, lifestyle, and exercise. I also want to remind you to go on myvillagegreen.com or go visit them in Bethesda, the Village Green Apothecary, 5415 North Cedar Lane. So I want you to know a little bit more about what they have to offer. At Village Green, they can individualize your nutrition for you, and they've got 45 specialists from pharmacists to nutritionists and herbalists who can help solve your specific health problems. And here you can find a one-of-a-kind nutrition formulations, learn about diet, exercise options, and fill your prescriptions and compounds. So they really do have it all. What they do is guide you through the essentials of healthy living, and it's a way of determining which nutrients are specific for your age, your stage, your gender, and all kinds of health issues that you may have. So the people on site are experts, and you can go also on myvillagegreen.com and you can talk with an expert there via the internet. You can write your question and you can get an answer. You can also listen to archives of this show that you're listening to right now on myvillagegreen.com. So remember to go either to myvillagegreen.com online or visit the Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. They're there to help you. Now, today we're going to talk about a number of subjects, and I always have some news you can use, so I've got that. And then we'll be talking to Dr. Tracy Freeman. She is a holistic medical physician, and her specialty is autism, ADHD. She's a holistic pediatrician, and she loves to talk about pre-pregnancy preparation. So we're going to cover all things children today after the news you can use. So what do we have in the news that's interesting? I wanted to update you on aspirin, and there's some interesting aspects to aspirin. I think most of you know what aspirin is, but may not know that it's a very natural substance, and it dates back to the Greeks, who used to make a powder from the willow bark tree, and that's where aspirin comes from. In fact, natural aspirin compounds always have willow bark in them. And they found that it relieved fever and pain. So aspirin is not new. And it's in a class of meds that we call non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. That's NSAIDs. They work by inhibiting enzymes that make our bad prostaglandins. So they reduce inflammation and, as we said before, fevers. And it also keeps the blood from clotting excessively. And like any medication or really any nutrient that affects the thinness or thickness of the blood, it's important to take into account all of the aspects of what a patient is taking. There are many medications on the market that have as a side effect, they can thin the blood. Antacids can do that. So if someone is taking an aspirin and they're taking vitamin E and omega-3 fatty acids and they're taking an anti-clot medication called warfarin, they could be at risk for bleeding easily. And as I said, antacids can contribute to that. And a lot of people are not aware that antacids can also thin the blood. Now, let's talk a little bit more about some controversies with aspirin. There's something called aspirin resistance. And for a number of people, aspirin just doesn't prevent clots and it doesn't reduce inflammation. And the term is aspirin resistant, meaning the person is resistant to the benefits of aspirin. And there really is no way to test for it. It's just something that's figured out by taking a history, or if somebody does have a heart attack or stroke and they've been on the aspirin, it can maybe be presumed that they were aspirin resistant. The estimates of how many people are aspirin resistant vary from the low of 5.5% to really 60%, which is a really high figure. And that's according to a recent study in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology. So cardiologists are concerned about this. Aspirin is this mild anticoagulant, and it reduces the risk of abnormal blood clots forming that could cause a heart attack or a stroke. Now, what else can you be taking? What can you do naturally to keep that blood thinner and to keep it more healthy? First of all, it's the diet, and we always come back to this, the Mediterranean-style diet, and it's really a diet that has a lot of vegetables. It includes olive oil, healthy cold water fish, such as salmon, the wild type, and it also includes whole grains. We're not talking about the breads and pastas and crackers and pretzels. We're talking about tabbouleh, quinoa, real oatmeal, real cream of wheat. And what else can you do? Well, there are some nutrients that are extremely helpful. There's also some tests. It's an easy test that you can have done. Any physician can do it for you. It's called fibrinogen. And you want to have that test done. It will tell you if you have a tendency toward thick blood or clotting, forming clots. So fibrinogen is one way to guide yourself. Fish oil that I mentioned earlier has a platelet thinning effect. That's why right before surgery, they ask you not to take fish oil. Vitamin E also does thin the blood. And I'm using a layman's term there. And vitamin E is very, very important. And again, if you're facing surgery, you're going to be told to not take vitamin E for up to 7 days before and maybe 3 to 7 days after. It really depends on the type of surgery. So what else can you do if you're a person who doesn't tolerate aspirin? You can take something called natokinase. And natokinase is very interesting. It has an anti-clotting effect, and it comes from fermented soybeans called natto. So it's been around a long time. You can certainly get it in its food type form, which is probably the best way to use it, but you can also take supplements of natokinase. And it compares very favorably with aspirin and lacks many of the side effects. On the omega-3 fatty acids, you always want a source that is free of toxins, because if you just take any source of omega-3 fatty acids, the toxins may be in there, and it's on the label. They brag if they have removed the toxins without the use of solvents. So just read the label to figure out if you've got a good product. And it's EPA and DHA that are so important, DHA especially for the brain, and EPA in general as an anti-inflammatory. These also help vision, cognition, hormones, and help keep your skin and hair healthy and your immune system. Now, vitamin E in moderate doses is also recommended. And instead of taking one kind, it's better to take mixed tocopherols and tocotrienols. These are different parts of vitamin E. In other words, these are components, forms of vitamin E, very important. So mixed natural is good. Anywhere from 400 to 1,200 international units a day. So I think that wraps it up about what you can do if you can't take aspirin and how to protect yourself in other ways. I just want to remind you that you are listening to the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260. I'm Dana Lake, your host for this hour, and please stay with us. We will be talking with Tracy Freeman. We'll talk about autism and holistic pediatrics and lots of topics within that topic. Stay with us. We'll be right back, folks, after this break. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260. I'm Dana Lake, and I'm your host for this hour. And I'm happy to introduce you to Dr. Tracy Freeman. She's a holistic medical physician, and she's a pediatrician, practices holistic pediatrics. and pre-pregnancy preparation, ADHD, and autism are topics of interest to her as well as to me. I think I've told you before, I've co-authored a book called The Kid-Friendly ADHD and Autism Cookbook, The Ultimate Guide to the Gluten-Free, Casein-Free Diet. We have just finished the second edition, and it will be out for Autism Month in April. Welcome to the show, Tracy.
Thank you, Dana. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's good to have you here. Tell us a little bit about your practice with the National Integrative Health Associates. You're among some of my friends and dearest colleagues.
Yes, at National Integrative Health, we are reaching out to families who have children affected by ADHD, autism, ADD, Asperger's. We really want to make it a center for these families to come and find treatment for their children in a way that the typical physicians and typical medical community, they're just not doing it.
Well, it's a complex subject, and as you well know, Tracy, it requires so much additional training, and it's new, and I always like to interject this because many people listening might say, but my pediatrician has dissuaded me from doing that or persuaded me to avoid it. And that used to be the recommendation of the American Academy of Pediatrics, who as of 2008 completely reversed their stand and now have a bulletin to pediatricians that they are to support their parents, their families that go through complementary alternative treatments, including the diet. They should not be discouraging, and they should learn about the treatments. They also asked to join the Autism Research Institute conferences called Defeat Autism Now and join forces with that organization toward preventing and treating autism. So I always have to put that plug in there. I'm so excited, Tracy.
And I didn't know all that. I knew that they had changed their stance, but I wasn't aware they had joined forces with Dan.
Well, what they've done is it's a cooperative communication that's going on where the two organizations have people that sit and meet together. They're very interested in these Dan protocols and the research. And if anybody's interested in research, you can email me at danalake@aol.com or go through myvillagegreen.com and leave a message. You can do that on Ask the Expert. And I will send you 80 pages of the scientific documentation that is behind these new treatments that Tracy and I are going to talk about. Tracy, fill us in a little bit on autism, just some background that you want folks to have in case they're not familiar.
Well, autism, frequently people think of it as a psychological disorder. But in my personal experience, as well as the patients I'm seeing, it's also got a tremendous physical component as well. Generally speaking, we have children who have gut issues where they're unable to digest their food properly. They have tremendous diarrhea or they can have tremendous constipation, either way. And we just see that these kids, as a result, aren't getting the nutrients they're unable to absorb as they need to, and that this impacts their behavior. I can tell you, I have a son on the spectrum, and I can tell you that when I changed his diet and I took out the gluten, the diarrhea that he had went away, and we had our first formed stool that we had had in the first 2.5 years of life. We had not seen a formed stool prior to that. So it's clear that these children have just physical issues that are beyond a mental problem.
And I'm glad you mentioned that because I think there is a lot of misunderstanding, and I can see why you have such a passion having been involved personally. Quite frequently people ask, do foods cause autism? And I always say, no, they don't, and that's not the question. It's problems that these kids have with their digestion that cause glutens and milk products to release their embedded opiate peptides, which are there, and get absorbed through a damaged gut. So I see it more as the problems cause the reactions to the foods.
Exactly. It's this leaky gut that they have. I would say there's probably a genetic component to autism.
Sure.
That predisposes these children to not be able to handle the toxins that are in the food now, not be able to handle environmental toxins. And as they are their gut heals, you see them healing. It's just such a nice nice thing to see progressing.
Well, we talk about that on the show. I always tell listeners it's like your own garbage disposals, and some people come into the world with disposals that aren't very efficient. In the profession, we call these methylation, sulfation problems, detox problems, metallothionine problems, but they're real. They have fancy names, but they are the disposals. And that seems to be what really underlies a lot of this, that environmental modification, meaning diet and everything you're exposed to, of gene expression, and meaning how the genes express themselves. And we can make that go bad, or we can make it go to the positive direction.
Right, exactly. I think that the methylation, the sulfation, as we substitute or supplement these children, we see that they respond tremendously once that their body's enabled to do the energetic cycles that it needs to do to produce the energy that you need to think and to move.
Yes, they're profoundly different. Tracy, what kind of tests are you utilizing for autism spectrum children and trying to differentiate their problems?
Well, we always start out with the basics, and that would be general blood chemistry to make sure that the liver and the kidneys are functioning well as thyroid studies. And then we could move along. Then we're looking at heavy metal burdens, genetic testing to address the things you just talked about, the methylation, the sulfation. And we also move into nutrition and supplement testing in terms of looking at the red blood cells and seeing what nutrition or what vitamins they're lacking or minerals they're lacking, and try and work with the child to get them more balanced.
Well, it's a lot of blood work, and I think what's a surprise to some of the pediatricians who really are anxious to help their children, help their patients, but have not been trained in how to assess, I've found that they're more than willing to do the tests that we request, and then we handle the specialty tests. And one of the common tests that they're willing to do is the vitamin D test, 25-hydroxy vitamin D, simply because there's been so much information in the last few years about how deficient we are as a culture, and that vitamin D deficiency contributes to developmental delays.
Sure. We test vitamin D as well, vitamin B12, a whole host of vitamins, for sure. We've also do just a quick test with the iodine on the skin to see if they're iodine deficient as well.
Yes, tell us, you know, that's a cute, if we can say something's cute about a test, it's a cute test to do. Tell us how it's done.
Oh, it's so simple. You take iodine like you'd find in a drugstore, and you place it on the skin, maybe just like an inch worth of the skin, and you just tell the patient or the mom to monitor the child and see how long it stays on the skin. And the trick is that the body will absorb iodine if it's deficient. So if it disappears, you need iodine. And if it stays, you have enough iodine.
Now, is there a certain level of or a certain span of time that you're looking for? Would it be a minute or 10 minutes?
Oh, we send them home with it, and basically it's within a few hours we're looking at.
So they watch it for a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an easy one. Another test that I know that you folks do and I do is a zinc taste test. It's called Zinc Tally, and it has zinc sulfate. And I love to use this test. Sometimes the parents want to do it too. If zinc is good, really good, you taste the zinc sulfate and it's horrible. It tastes like sulfur water in a tin cup. And if zinc is poor, if zinc levels are low, then it's not tasted. And most of these kids have profoundly low zincs.
That's true. They have there's a ratio of copper to zinc that the copper is hot too high and the zinc is too low.
Yeah, that's so common. And also that red blood cell test is helpful. I know you mentioned that, and people may not realize that's a specialty test for all kinds of minerals. It's intracellular, and as I always say, it's really looking at the bank account, because the normal blood work, the serum levels, are not reliable for many of these minerals. Tell us a little bit more about your approaches, and I think what we'll do is continue this at the next segment and the next two segments, but is there something you can say to our listeners that will clue them in to when to suspect autism? How early?
I think as early as 12 months. You have a child who's not pointing, who cannot respond to their name. Even earlier, if you have a child that maybe doesn't babble back and forth, you should probably just raise the flag and talk to your doctor about that and see. Down the line, if you have a child by 24 months who's not combining words, then you also have a problem there too.
Well, those are easy things to pick up, and we always love early intervention. Tracy, please stay with us. I want the listeners to know that you're going to be here through the show. We'll be talking about this subject and answering what we know are to be a lot of people's questions. And listeners, stay with us. We're going to be right back after this break. I'm Dana Lake with The Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260. Hello, welcome back to The Essentials of Healthy Living. I'm Dana Lake, your host, and we are brought to you by the Village Green Apothecary, reminding you to go on myvillagegreen.com for all your shopping, nutrition needs. They have also a wide range of books and some very interesting experts that can help you with your health questions. So that's myvillagegreen.com. And we're talking with Tracy Freeman. She's with National Integrative Health Associates in Chevy Chase, and we're happy to have her here. We're talking about autism. So, Tracy, let's go back over some of the signs and symptoms. You mentioned autism could be suspected as early as 12 months if they're not pointing or babbling, or by 24 months not combining words. What are some other signs and symptoms to look for?
The other thing is the gut issues that we're talking about. If you have a child with either severe constipation or diarrhea, these are the things parents remember in hindsight that could have been clues. Otherwise, the eye contact is huge. If you have a child who, for whatever reason, just looks away when you look at them, that's an issue as well. And do they have interest in playing with other children? So even if they maybe just are chasing behind the other children, but they should just want to play and want to engage with other people and other children.
And that's the socialization part of autism. What about some of these early symptoms where between 4 and 6 months, if you hold them and tilt them to the left or right, the child more directed toward neurodevelopmental delays flops, the head flops, whereas a typically developing child, they will try to right their head. Is that still something that's utilized?
I believe it is, but it's not very well known. That's something that I learned in medical school a while ago. But I don't think that many parents know that or are as educated to that. And I haven't heard many people speak to, oh, my doctor told me to check and see if the child is floppy.
Yes, it's kind of interesting because it seems pretty basic and easy to do. The other interesting symptom that we see in some children is when their brains are damaged at that time after they've developed well and before they cascade into problems, they'll have that accelerated head growth somewhere in the first 2 years, but then that slows down. How much of that do you see in your autism population?
We do see larger than normal heads. Certainly, that's pretty common. I know that some people say that that's the issue, that their brains are so large that they're unable to make the neurological connections, the nerve connections they need to be able to organize their thoughts.
Well, I've certainly read that, and I think it's interesting. I know some people also feel that what's happening is there's an immune attack on the brain, and that's what causes the enlargement. So
yeah, inflammation with these children is huge. I mean, there's just so much inflammation. You can do an EEG. A lot of these children end up getting the EEG is a test that you do for seizures, and it'll come back that there's just global inflammation, and there's really it's sad to see.
Yes, but it actually has put a physical characteristic, and you mentioned that early on, that there really are physical signs and symptoms that can tell you this is going toward autism, but the underlying issues is that's what we want to tackle. What causes it and how we can turn it around. Tell me what you're doing as far as treatments, how children respond. Do you have a particular way? Do you start with diet first or integrate it slowly with the supplements?
Oh, we always start with diet. Diet to us at National Integrated Health is the key. We always start with gluten-free and casein-free, as you mentioned earlier, as you've written a book on. And we also, as a result of taking certain things out of the diet, we have to add supplements back in, particularly calcium is of importance to a growing child. And from diet and nutrition, supplementation, we also then will move into a lot of testing to see where the child stands. And you've mentioned a lot of these already. And what we do at National Integrated Health that's unique for parents who are interested is a lot of allergy testing through applied kinesiology or autonomic response testing, which is definitely a more alternative medicine approach to these children. But we're seeing great results with it.
Well, it's non-invasive, and it can give you more information, certainly, than not doing anything.
Yes, absolutely. And I know in my own case with my own son, initially we put him on so many supplements that he had diarrhea secondary to the supplements we put him on. And by doing the muscle testing and seeing which supplements worked well with his body, we were able to stop the diarrhea from that alone.
Well, that's where it can be such a a helpful guide. There is some new information. I was at a think tank recently, and we talked about vitamin D. And the new information, according to the Vitamin D Council, is that some of these children have exponentially high needs, way beyond what is usually expected. And I heard numbers at 6,000 to 8,000. And, of course, they're monitored and followed by the blood tests for this. But this is pretty new.
Yes, pretty new, and it's pervasive, actually, beyond the autism community. Certainly, they seem to suffer from this more than others. We are dosing vitamin D pretty high because the deficits are so incredible.
And actually, parents are reporting pretty quick responses with it.
Sure, I can imagine so, because they've just been kind of going along, and this is a vital nutrient.
Well, I know that D has always been part of cod liver oil, and it's been traditional to use the cod liver oil and zinc to elicit better eye contact as well as improve skin and less what we call stims. And for our listeners, that's when the children clap or flap or jump up and down in a very excited manner. That's their neurological systems are hyperwired, and so you'll see that kind of behavior. Are you seeing as much effect with cod liver oil and zinc, or are you seeing additional effects for getting rid of the eye contact problems?
Definitely the cod liver oil has an impact on eye contact and speech. I think we see when we examine the children and we touch the back of their arms, they'll have these little chicken bumps, we call them.
Right.
And that's a sign for us that this is a child who could do well with a fish oil, likely the cod liver oil, because we do want to incorporate the vitamin D and the vitamin A if they tolerate it.
Yes.
So that is a very key component.
Well, and it's been around a while for, treating special children. I know that I heard about this certainly 20 years ago, maybe even longer, even in articles by Adele Davis a long, long time ago. So what's new sometimes comes from what's old.
Right. My mother used to take cod liver oil by force.
Well, you know, it was done. It was in the 50s that the American Academy of Pediatrics discouraged mothers from giving cod liver oil because the thought in that generation was that milk-based formulas were all people needed, and no one needed the omega-3s. And I look at it as the beginning of this onslaught of developmental delays, since omega-3 is what the brain needs, and the milk-based formulas had none of it up until about, 2001.
Right, exactly. The DHA is critical for the developing brain, and certainly you get a lot of that from breast milk. And if you don't breastfeed, then certainly the formula would need to have that, or you'd need to supplement.
Well, I think we have just a short period of time. When we do come back, I want to talk about ADHD as well, and about pregnancy, which is one of my favorite topics, and I know it's yours too, Tracy. Do you have any more little tidbits right before we take this break?
Just to be on guard, I just think that there's just such a pervasive problem with these children today, with 1 in 4 being either autism, ADHD, ADD, or allergies. And just to watch your children so you can get early diagnosis, I just think that that's the take-home message. To watch your children, get diagnosed, and get started on helping your child.
You know, that's so important. And I'm starting to see children show up in the practice under a year, whereas it used to be ages 3 to 4. And this is a dramatic change in the last 5 years. And Tracy, you may be seeing the same thing, that pediatricians are now picking it up because there are many education modules teaching pediatricians how to recognize these. And there's also that wonderful film. You can just Google autism signs and symptoms. And there's a film that both professionals and lay people, anybody, can look at to see comparing typically developing child with a child that is developing autism. Are you using that film at all with your families?
No, I wasn't even aware of that film, and considering the amount of research I continually do on autism, I did not know about that.
Yeah, I think it's on the AutismSpeaks.com website, and it's a godsend for people who, we can talk all day about what a stim is, flapping, clapping, what eye contact problems are, but when you actually see a side-to-side difference, pictures are always worth 1,000 words. It's an old cliche, and it's still true. Well, listeners, stay with us because we'll be back, and we'll be talking about pregnancy, a healthy pregnancy, and a little bit about trying to prevent ADHD and autism, and we'll talk about ADHD as well. I'm Dana Lake, your host with The Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary. We'll be back after this break. Hello, you're listening to The Essentials of Healthy Living. I'm Dana Lake, your host for this hour, and this is our final segment. We've been discussing with Dr. Tracy Freeman of National Integrative Health Associates in Chevy Chase. NIA is their nickname. We've been discussing autism, ADHD, and we want to continue that discussion and talk about pregnancy. Dr. Freeman, could you give us a little bit more information on ADHD? We don't want to leave that one out.
Well, we consider ADHD to be part of the autism spectrum, certainly better off, but with a lot of the same issues. Effectively, we're looking at the toxicity burden that these children have, the heavy metal burdens, digestion problems, nutritional deficiencies, and just assessing them to make them more well, effectively. And we find that as we treat the deficiencies and unburden their bodies, that the children are much more able to concentrate and to focus.
I'm glad you mentioned that because it's always controversial as to what the spectrum is, and there is not one autism, there are autisms, and the spectrum really, in some people's definitions, as you have said, begins with ADHD, and it's sometimes hard to differentiate because they may not have all of what we see on the spectrum. They may not have the eye contact problems. They may not have the stims, but they have sensory issues, auditory processing issues. They may be sensory seeking or sensory averse. They may have some language issues. So it really, as you and I know, it's more important to us what their underlying biochemical findings are, but they need to have the term in order to get services, the appropriate services. So defining it is important. With ADHD, I find that they have a lot of the same problems. They are just more mild.
Exactly. That's exactly what we're finding as well. And in fact, we find that as autistic children improve, they move into ADHD. And so it's just a continuum.
You know, I hadn't thought about that, but that is what we see. I call it sliding off the spectrum.
Exactly.
And, one mom was so happy because they moved, and the daughter went into a school without the diagnosis, and she had been full-fledged autism. And she was so nervous about how she would do. So she would call the teacher and say, "How's she doing? Is she paying attention?" And the teacher said, "Oh, I have to remind her, but I wouldn't call it ADD or anything like that." Now that's that's music to a parent's ears who's had an autistic child.
Oh, exactly. In fact, if you have, as I do, if you have an autistic child, then ADHD looks a lot easier, and you'd almost welcome it for the progress it means.
Yeah, one of my patients said, If you think it's difficult doing these diets, it's much more difficult living with an autistic child.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is just such a motivating factor. To have a child who doesn't respond or isn't interacting for their entire life is just not an option as far as I'm concerned.
Well, now that we know we can get recovery, and we certainly have been able to do it, ADHD now looks like just an easy thing to handle. I find low magnesium is very common, and with the autism spectrum children, certainly magnesium as well, but I see zinc as profoundly deficient in the spectrum children, mildly or moderately deficient in ADHD children.
And that probably speaks to also how their bodies on a biochemical level react, because zinc is just such a needed cofactor for so many of the processes in the body.
And once you know that it's involved in brain pruning, sensory, for vision, auditory, taste, touch, smell, that spells autism when you look at the deficiency signs and symptoms. I'd like to talk a little bit more about other therapies for ADHD. Do you integrate other therapies for ADHD children and the autism children, or do you refer out for behavior therapies, processing, et cetera?
At NIA, National Integrated Health, we only focus on the physical side. We refer out for occupational therapy, speech therapy if needed, or any of the sensory processing therapies that would be required, and the behavioral therapy as well.
Yes, they're so wonderful, and I actually do the same with my practice, and we're lucky in this area to have so many fine services available. Now, what about pregnancy? I'm starting to get parents who have an autistic child or a child with autism who want to get pregnant again, and they want to do everything they can to have a healthy pregnancy, as does every woman. But these parents are more motivated because of having a child with autism. Are you seeing more of this population?
Absolutely. As I meet the children, I meet the moms, and a lot of them are interested in having another child, and rightfully terrified that they'll experience a second autistic child. So what we look at is their health status. In the same way, we look at their ability as able to digest food and the ability of their gut to handle their nutrition, and we look at their toxic burdens as well.
I think it's such a refreshing look at it. With the families, we look at what's gone wrong with the child, and we test both mom and dad. And what I'm finding is that one or both parents will have some of these inefficiencies, deficiencies that the child presented with. They may be more mild. And we manipulate those in what I call pre-prenatal nutrition, pre-pregnancy. I like to get people a year in advance. Also for those who may have amalgam fillings. And I was happy that in 2008, the FDA finally said that mercury, that mercury in amalgam fillings is a neurotoxin to developing fetuses.
Thank God they said that, because that is step one for us, getting the fillings out of the mouth.
And, you know, it's always been true. By the time it's said, it's certainly not news. I'm sorry it's taken 40 years for this acknowledgement, but I was thrilled because it means we're starting to march in that direction where I look for the day. I'm a dental hygienist by training, but I look for the day when mercury in the human mouth is banned. It's second most neurotoxic substance in the body. It has no business in the human body.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
And what do you do to help get rid of toxic metals?
Well, we begin by testing, first of all, and it's a urine test that we do. And then we have chelation, effectively, and that just means to bind. We bind up the bad stuff and help your body to pee it out or urinate the toxins out.
Well, and that's the neat part of measuring it. I think that the medical treatment of these children with the nutritional and diet therapies is based on more testing that is absolutely specific to that child. And some people complain and say, well, you need double blinds. Well, we don't need double blinds to give iron for iron deficiency. We're treating the child. And to me, that's very exciting. And I think that most parents and professionals are not aware of the level of testing we can accomplish.
Because so much has happened so quickly. There's just so many more tests available and so much to keep up with. But you're right, that we are finding that these kids, there's no way you can turn your back on the deficiencies that they have. They just definitely need supplementation. It's deficiencies to the level where their diet isn't going to take care of it.
Absolutely. And also with the pregnancy, we certainly push the omega-3s just as we do with the children. I push it for all pregnancies and have for decades, as the probiotics as well. I'm sure you do that too.
Yes, I think what most mothers need to know is that when the baby comes through the canal, they are pure, and the first exposure they get, the first bacteria they get, is the mother's stool. So it's so important for that to be filled with good probiotics, good bacteria, so that that baby can start off with good gastrointestinal or gut flora, so that they can fight diseases, they can detoxify on their own. That's the gift that a mom can give to their child.
I'm glad you mentioned that. And also they get the bifidus and other cultures from breast milk, which
Absolutely.
Is why we can't really replace it.
No, and I really recommend 2 years of nursing if you can do it. If you are able to do it, it would be the best thing for the baby.
Well, Tracy, I hate to end this. We could talk for hours, and I thank you so much for being on the show, and we will definitely want you to come back in the future.
And thank you so much. I was glad to do it. Thank you.
Oh, good. I hope that was interesting, and I hope there, even if you personally don't have a child with autism, I know that you have it somewhere in your family or among friends, and it's always good. The word is autism is treatable and recovery is possible. So to our listeners, I want to thank you for joining us and remind you to tune in every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. We're here for you on the Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green. So remember to take care of yourself and at least one other person and go green with Village Green. This is Dana Lake and Village Green wishing each and every one of you good health and a great day.